Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. Football season is almost back. With the Buckeyes taking home the national championship title last season, the reigning champs are looking to have another historic year. And this season will look a lot different for all college sports. After the House versus NCAA settlement, a huge federal case that was recently finalized, it allows schools to directly pay college athletes for the first time. Athletic departments can now distribute $20.5 million to its players. Joining us to talk about this new era of college sports is Ross Bjork, the athletic director for The Ohio State University. Welcome to All Sides, Ross.
Thanks for having me on again, Amy. Good to see you again.
Good to see you, too. So, Ohio State football starts its season with a rematch of last year's Cotton Bowl. That's against Texas. And this year's team looks a little different. 14 players were drafted. Several coaches departed. And at Media Day this year, head coach Ryan Day spoke about the upcoming season and the team's perspective.
Federal funding for public...
But Texas game is, you know, 39 days away from right now, and the team that we have currently, you know, wants to leave their own legacy behind. And they made that clear a week after the national championship game and, you know, some of the comments that they made. And, you know, we've said it before, we're not defending national champions because we're not defending anything. You know, they can't take the trophy away. We're looking to attack and win a championship with this team. And so that started in the off season, and it's continuing in through July. I think we've had a great off season, but now we need to have a great August as we head into this first game against Texas.
Now the Texas game is a lot closer than 39 days away. I think it's like 24 right, days now, right. If my math is correct. How do you feel about this season?
Yeah, you know, I think this time of year for me, being in college athletics, pretty much my whole adult life anyway, it's always a Happy New Year perspective. I think when August 1st hits, that's sort of a reflective moment to say, gosh, you know, new teams, new identity, new school year, you know, new logistics around, you know, game day, which I'm sure we'll talk about those kind of things. So I always just take this mentality of, and I say, Happy New Year. And people are like, what does that mean? It means that each academic year you get to sort of reset, you get to refocus, you get to have new identities. And so I think that clip from Coach Day, I think, is a great reflection of the culture of the program, where, you know, kind of iron sharpens iron, where, look, we want to compete. Yeah, last year happened and we'll celebrate that, and, you know, we've got banners and all those things, but now we have to prove something else. We have to prove that this team can compete, and this team has their identity, and this team has new leaders, and people are stepping up in unique ways. But we also have a lot of pieces that do have to come together. There's a new quarterback, there's new running backs, there's new defensive linemen, right? There's new pieces from a playing standpoint. But the talent's always going to be here at Ohio State. Now it's about, how do we have our identity? How do those new players adapt to their role? So I just think there's a ton of kind of unique excitement because there is so much newness and there is a lot of transition, and there's, you know, what's Matt Patricia going to do on defense? And now Brian Hartline has command of the offense, and, you know, what does all that look like? And so to me, it's just a ton of excitement around, you know, Buckeye football going into 2025.
And you must have felt like a little something was missing at some of the games, because you just made an announcement that in some special ways you want to enhance the game day experience. That's why is this needed? You won a national championship. Yeah. What do you need to change?
Yeah, you know, believe me, it's not just me who was saying some of these things. You know, everywhere I went, you know, last fall, and, you know, after the first couple games, and I saw things in motion, and then I'd get some feedback or I'd hear from other people. And then a lot of people that went out to the Oregon game or even watched it on TV came back and said, what about that setting? What about that atmosphere? And then we had the Indiana games, and we had the game, and we had the Michigan game. And those two games, we brought in, you know, a DJ, if you will, a mic man, to try to hype the crowd and try to infuse some new energy. And it just felt like, in this era, how can we modernize? How can we utilize the great traditions that we have, and, you know, not take away from any of those, but enhance those features, elevate the platform of what it means to be a Buckeye. And so all the feedback from surveys to one-on-one conversations to group settings, you know, part of this is technology. We need some new infrastructure. So sound system, video board, LED board, those things will come a little bit later over the next couple years. But in the meantime, we have this great opportunity to really take the entertainment level to a new level, to really take tradition and just evolve it. We called it Tradition Evolved, right? Infuse, you know, legacy personalities like an Archie Griffin into, you know, our game day script. So it really just took a chance to take a step back, reflect on everything, use the power of what it means to be a Buckeye, use the power of so many unique traditions, but then sprinkle that with a lot of newness. And so we just felt the timing was right as we go into sort of this new era in college sports.
So you're giving all the fans towels at the home opener.
Right.
Why?
Right. You know, one of the things we heard was give us something that is sort of uniform. Give us something that we can, you know, use as like a fan attraction. And people use pom-poms. That's kind of a big thing, you know, maybe in the SEC. We know there's a towel used at that black and gold team down the road, a terrible towel.
As a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, that's me, born and raised, I have to take a moment and say, where in the world did you come up with a towel idea?
I know, exactly, right? Yeah. They, I guess there was
all
a
the
towel.
All the best ideas are stolen, is that right?
I think so.
Yeah.
Is there really a new idea that's out there in sports? But it really stemmed from, you know, talking to students as well. They wanted something that would, like, show emotion and, like, have a visible... You know, every now and then they'd lift up their shoe. Well, when it's cold, they
don't
need
take
their shoes
your shoe off
on their feet.
Okay,
you know, the shoe, right? The horseshoe, the shoe.
I get it, but man, that's
so
a little complicated taking shoe off.
I think a towel has a unifying, you know, sort of symbolic gesture to say, this is what we do here at Ohio State. So, yeah, it's going to take some time to catch on. We're giving away free towels at the Texas game, bring that back to the next game and the next game. Obviously, it becomes a retail component, you know, capitalizing on the, right? The Ohio State University, calling it the towel, so it has a branding opportunity. But honestly, we just need energy in our stadium. And so it was just a way to sort of bring people together, if you will.
Well, I'm an experienced towel twirler, so I'm gonna be looking around to see if they know how to do it, because there's a technique. All right,
please teach your fellow fans then if they're not catching on.
I have plenty of terrible towels, but I won't bring those to the stadium. I'll bring yours.
Wrong
so
color.
Is it scarlet? Is the towel? What I didn't see a picture of it yet.
Yeah, we showcased a scarlet, but I think we're looking at probably a white, you know, a white towel to roll out. So.
Now you're also moving when we hear Hang on Sloopy at the games. Why?
Yeah, you know, I think it's very important to just state emphatically that Hang on Sloopy will always be played at all of our games. I mean, we play it all the time. You know, really this stemmed from, you know, emotion, right? Stirring emotion around big moments during the game.
So between the third and fourth quarter wasn't emotional enough, in your opinion, or wasn't the right time?
Some games it is, some games it isn't, right? And so we felt like it was more of a restrictive opportunity. So in talking to the band and listening to them, giving them more freedom to kind of make it more organic during the game. Hey, this is a great moment to play the song. Let's go. Let's play it. Versus, hey, this might have been a good moment to play it, but we can't play it because we always play it here. So giving more creativity, giving more flexibility depending on the moment. It might be played in the second quarter because there's a key moment, right? That song, you know, resonates better at that moment. So we felt
to pump up the crowd.
Yeah, we felt like it was... By just having it always in the third and fourth quarter, it felt like it was just restrictive when you could use it and when you could not use it. So it gives the band more flexibility. It makes them more part of kind of the scripting, if you will. The other important move with the band is put them in the north end zone. We think the sound will amplify better. We're also going to mic the band and have speakers that will amplify their sound. So this is a way for us, we think, in our mind, as we mapped all this out, is to get the band, you know, even more involved in game day, especially in the emotional part of it, versus just having sort of a robotic script that was not nimble and not flexible. This gives us ultimate flexibility.
And now you also plan to ring the victory bell before the game starts. That's a little presumptuous.
Yes. So if you, and again, kind of when you study the history of the Victory Bell, and you read the words for vigor,
okay,
right? That means energy. That means enthusiasm. And so we can utilize that, not just after the game, utilize it, again, a symbolic way to bring in legacy, you know, personality. So the first one, obviously, Archie Griffin, you know,
He's going to ring the bell.
But, you know, look, if a former player is back in town, if there's a celebrity that's connected to Ohio State, if there's a legacy person, maybe if LeBron's at the game, right, he's a big Buckeye fan, right, does he ring the bell? Again, it's a way to stir emotion. It's a way to utilize history. It's a way to signify, here come the Buckeyes, right? And it's a way to signify, yes, we want the victory. We're not being presumptuous about it. What we're saying is it's a symbol around passion and spirit and energy and history. Let's infuse that as the team, you know, walks down the tunnel.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about Ohio State sports and the upcoming football season with Ross Bjork, athletic director at Ohio State. Now, you also plan to do a blackout game versus Penn State, so you're asking everyone to wear black. Does that mean it'll be a night game?
I think we know.
You're sighing.
I think we know the Buckeyes drive big noon kickoff. That'll be a high-powered game, so I think we probably know what's going to happen around game time for that one.
What do we know? I don't know what you mean. It'll be at noon.
Won't
be at night.
They love the Buckeyes.
Okay.
And big noon is a big deal, right? They've invested in that time slot. So I think.
Okay.
We'll
you don't want to answer.
We'll presume it's a big noon. It's a 12 noon kickoff.
And you're gonna have everyone wear black.
We are.
All right.
It'll be November.
Yeah.
Right?
So it won't
be
as hot.
A little chilly, right? Okay. Won't be as hot.
Okay. Yep. Do you feel like fans want more night games? Do you get a say in that? Can you make that happen?
Yeah, you know, we could have a whole series on this too. You know, we've spent a lot of time kind of working with Fox, working with the Big Ten to understand. Look, we know why we're chosen for big noon kickoff. We know it. Our brand is the biggest brand. We have the most viewership. We have the biggest fan base. We've carried the window in that noon kickoff. What we're asking for is just a little more flexibility. Why does every one of our games have to be at noon, right? So, but the TV contracts, the way they're laid out, is Fox has the first pick. They own the noon window. They don't own a night window. They don't own a 3:30 window. They have the first pick. And then it goes to sort of a pooling of NBC and CBS and the Big Ten Network. CBS owns the 3:30 window, and NBC owns the 7:30 window. There's not flexibility within that. Fox can't just say, hey, for this game, we want a 7:30 window, and for this game, we want a 3:30. So the lack of flexibility that was kind of built into this, to me, that's the part that we have to continue to chip away at. So when the CBS and NBC contracts come up in 2030, which is, you know, seems like a long time ago, but it'll go fast, how can we create flexibility within our TV partners? How can we create more just – you know, movement within, why do we always have to play at noon? Why can't we have more adaptability throughout? And so that's what we're asking for. That's what we're really kind of pressing with the Big Ten. But right now, there just is no flexibility. So Fox is going to pick the biggest game. And if you look week by week, we're going to be in that window a
that
lot.
Week, I didn't analyze the week, but is Ohio State, Penn State that week the game?
I mean, it's, yeah, within the Big Ten.
All
it,
right.
It is. So, yeah. So just everyone be patient, you know, but the message also is it should not matter when we play. We want our fans. We're asking our fans to show up, be loud, right? Support the team, create a home field advantage, and then we'll work on that stuff, you know, off the field.
All right. So hang on till 2030 for more night games.
Just hang on.
hang on.
Be patient.
Hang on,
yep.
As the song says,
that's
right? See,
that's
it all connects together.
There you go.
How much added pressure do you feel like the players and coaches feel after being national champions?
You know, I think the great thing and the unique thing, and I think the probably the secret formula here at Ohio State, whether you mow the grass or you're the head football coach or you're a player on the football team or you're on our golf team, is understanding the pressure that it comes with being a Buckeye, where everything matters, excellence is the standard. It's not just a one-time destination on January 20th, right? It's every day of the year. How do you understand that and handle that, but then execute? And so to me, what I see is execution. I see work. People a lot of times talk about the process. Hey, let's not be fixated on the scoreboard. Let's be fixated on our process. And if we do the process right, the scoreboard will take care of itself. And I really think that as I've studied that the last 6 months of being here at Ohio State, I think that's the secret sauce is handling the pressure, embracing it. Mm-hmm. You can't run away from it. Again, no matter what your role is here at Ohio State, there's pressure to perform because that's what people expect. But then also don't let execution get paralyzed by the pressure. Mm. Execute. So what I see from our players is part of that attitude that we talked about. Last year's last year. Let's set our new identity. Let's go to work every day. I mean, Jeremiah Smith, I mean, use him. He could easily be like, I'm good. Mm-hmm. I had a great season. I was an All-American. You know, I'm being hyped as a Heisman Trophy. Guess what he did? He gained more weight. He got faster. He said he's never worked as hard. So that kind of mindset around execution while also understanding the pressure, I think that's the secret sauce here. So that's the attitude that I've seen. Of course they understand what they have to do. Of course they understand that Buckeyes expect you to win every game. They get that. But I think if you actually embrace that and talk about it versus shying away from it, then I think your execution will meet that standard.
Now, the football team won the national championship your first year on the job. That's pretty good for you for your new tenure. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. My obvious next question is about Michigan, right? Because that's right, where we
right,
go.
Right.
Do you worry about that game this season?
Well, look, I think anytime you go on the road in the Big Ten, I think if you're a coach, you probably worry about every game for sure. But a road game in the Big Ten is always tough. I mean, look, we have to go to Washington. We have to go to Illinois, Wisconsin. But that game means so much, right? It means so much year-round. No one will ever say that game doesn't matter, right? And so you're always worried about it. You're always worried about, okay, how do we perform? But there's a long ways to go. You know, we're still going through training camp. We've got 11 games before that game. The build-up to that game this year I think will be special because of what happened last year. Obviously emotions, right, after the game got in the way. We don't want that to happen. So we've got to be able to handle all of those things. So, you know, I'd never like worry per se. What I get concerned about is, are we prepared? Are we doing all the right things? Are we healthy at the end of the year? Are we playing our best football? That's what coaches want to see. Are we playing our best football at the end of the season? Those are the things that you worry about. If you worry about the outcome of the game, you'll get fixated on that and you'll drown yourself in the pressure. And so that's what I'm going to look forward to as we go through the season.
After the Michigan game last year, Ryan Day faced a lot of scrutiny, mm-hmm. some of it very mean. And then he won a national championship. So then, you know, all is forgiven, right? Is he in an okay place about Michigan coming up on this year?
Yeah, you know, we've had long talks, you know, just about, okay, how do you approach that game in this new era? I mean, what's fascinating, we could play them 3 times in 1 year. If you think about it, you play them at the end of the regular season. If both teams are undefeated going into that game, probably matching up in the Big Ten championship game the very next week. And then that means both teams are playoff teams. So you could theoretically match up with them 3 times, right? And so how do you handle that? How do you talk about that? How do you deal with that? How do you compartmentalize the game at the end of the year, knowing that you might play them 3 weeks later, 4 weeks later? So we've talked a lot about just approach, mentality. You know, do you change some things up a little bit around sort of the football piece of it, but also the attitude piece of it, approaching that game? So we've talked a little bit about that, but that game is never going to go away. The expectations are always going to be there. Yes, we've lost 4 in a row. There's reasons why, right? Those things have happened. So those are the things you just try to work through. But if, again, how do you handle the pressure of this job here and that game, but also the ability to execute? And so the execution piece has to be at the highest level. That's what we're focused on.
Coming up, we're going to talk about revenue sharing, also known as paying athletes, and we're going to talk about the effect of name, image, and likeness deals on college sports. We are talking with Ohio State Athletic Director Ross Bjork. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. The world of college sports will look considerably different this year after a recent settlement. The case is called House versus NCAA and is a landmark agreement in college sports that allows schools to directly pay college athletes, not in the form of academic scholarships, but in real, actual money. Plus, players are now allowed to earn money through name, image, and likeness deals outside of their colleges and universities as well. With the possibility for million-dollar deals, some athletes will seek out schools that have the most to offer. And recently, head football coach Ryan Day had this to say about the current state of college football.
I think it was 4 years ago that I was here when I said, I think in about 5 years, we won't recognize what college football looks like. I think that I was right off the field. I think I was wrong on the field. I think the product's as good as it's ever been. I think the athletes are better than they've ever been. Teams are great, certainly here in the Big Ten and across the country. But off the field, it's just very, very different. It's constantly changing. And so, that's where great alignment will be very, very important. I think we're very well positioned here at Ohio State moving forward. And I want to thank them for all their hard work.
So, Ohio State Athletic Director Ross Bjork is with us. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me again.
And do you agree with Coach Day of what college football is becoming with all this money?
Yeah, you really have to take a step back over the last 5 years, really since COVID, right? Think of all the changes that have happened, whether it's legal threats, court cases, Supreme Court basically blistered in their opinion. College athletics said, we better change, our model. You've had sports betting matters. You have up to 40 different state-by-state NIL structures right now because state laws became the thing to do because we don't really have national oversight per se. And then the House case was looming. And settlement talks around the House case started in really summer of 2023. When it was brought to us by our conferences, I was at a different program at that point. I was in the SEC, and we said the reason why we would settle is we want clarity and we want durability. We need some kind of runway because every time we create a rule, we get sued. And that's no way to operate any sort of enterprise, business, higher education, whatever it might be. And so, look, Coach Day is right that when he said that 4 years ago, he's definitely right that it's not going to look the same off the field. So the business structure, the infrastructure it takes to run revenue sharing, it took forever to figure out how do we actually pay the athlete the revenue share dollars. It's not financial aid. It's not payroll. They're not getting a W-2 from Ohio State. It's not a contract that would be like through a vendor, right? It's not, we're not buying anything, right? And so we're actually using the Big Ten is actually going to distribute dollars to our athletes. We will tell them what athlete gets what money. But even like mapping that out, think about how complex that is. And that sounds simple. Oh, you should just be able to write a check to the athlete. Well, no, it's not that easy, in a complex organization like a university. So there's so many things that are on our plate right now. But here's the things that are not going to go away. We are going to go to class, and we will get an education as an athlete, and we will play the games. Everything in the middle of that is all changing to Coach's point. And so he's right. We have to have alignment. We have to have strategy. We're constantly working on all of our strategies around the third-party NIL world. How do we engage sponsors, current sponsors, new sponsors with our athletes? There's a whole robust system. The recruiting landscape right now is sort of in a gray area because the College Sports Commission, which is now the entity running the House case settlement implementation, the rules have not been published. It's a 3-person staff. What about enforcement? So I could go on and on, but
I know,
those are the things that we're dealing with.
So
right now
I have like 23 follow-up questions.
I just set the table.
Yes. Okay. All right. So We're calling it revenue sharing. A lot of articles I read, they all call it revenue sharing, but you're going to pay the athletes, right? And why are we dancing around this terminology? You're paying them.
Yeah. You know, the settlement language calls it actually institutional name, image, likeness rights. So we are basically, we're taking an athlete and we're saying, we are going to buy your institutional rights for a fee, basically, that we will decide what that is. We'll negotiate that. Is it pay for play? Is it compensation? Yes, it is, right? And so, but that's how the settlement language was written. And I think a lot of that has to do with employment status, right? These are still students.
So let's talk about that, that they're still students. Right. Do you feel like they should be employees? Do you want to give them all W-2s?
I think at this point in time, I think we have to keep the nexus related to academics. I think if we get away from not being students, so what happens if they become employees is the next thing that is brought up is, well, they should not go to class. If that happens, then we're untethered to the academic mission. Look, we know there's money. We know there's big business. We know there's commercial activity. We can acknowledge all of that at the same time, understanding that this is about academics. Employment, it sounds easy. It really, like, a lot of my colleagues are like, let's just make them employees.
A lot of students have jobs. State by state laws differ, right?
And then collective bargaining gets brought up, that word. Ohio's a right-to-work state. You know, I came from Texas. Texas is a right-to-work state, meaning collective bargaining sometimes can just be ineffective, if you will. So there's a lot of complications around it. I think we have to continue to make sure that the nexus is about being students and about higher education. If there's a model, if there's a hybrid model that we can embrace that has legal protections for the athlete and for the institution, if it outlines what does, you know, negotiating, bargaining, whatever you want to call it, what does that look like? Is that a structure? I'm all for that. But the runway to get there is not a linear pathway. It is a lot of moving parts around this. And so I think we just have a lot of work to do. But the House case, at least it gives us clarity around this is the institutional revenue sharing. This is what we're compensating athletes. Let's call it that. That's okay. And then it also has a structure on the third party NIL. And we have to get this up and running. We have to live through this. We have to see how this works. We have to give it a try because our athletes deserve it. The structure deserves it. The fans need clarity. Our coaches need clarity. The whole world needs clarity around college athletics.
So Jeremiah Smith will be going to class in a couple of weeks, correct?
Right. That's right.
Yes.
That's exactly right.
And you have $20.5 million to work with. Are you able to say publicly, you know, what of that is Jeremiah Smith going to get?
We are not, right?
No.
And so that gets into, he's still a student, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a student record. There's, you know, FERPA issue, you know, federal rights and things like that. And so, yeah, those things are all going to be, you know, confidential between the athlete and the institution. The other thing about the $20.5 million, we're going to kind of go to math class here, is we added over 90 new scholarships. Part of this in our entire athletic department across all sports. Part of the settlement says that if you add one new scholarship, you have to count that towards the $20.5 million, up to $2.5 million. So we spent more than $2.5 million on new scholarships. So actually, we're distributing $18 million of the $20.5 in actual cash. The other $2.5 is new scholarships. 23 of our sports we added new scholarships for. So that's a wrinkle, that's a nuance into this whole formula. And that was put together because a lot of us were trying to figure out, how do we pay for this? How can we afford $20.5 million? But scholarship limits also went away as part of the settlement. We used to have a restrictive cap on scholarships per sport, and that went away, which is the right thing to do. We should not have been restrictive in that environment. So it gets into a lot of nuances around this. So it's really $18 million that we have to.
So are you saying scholarships are different money because it's not like revenue money? It's
financial aid.
Okay.
Right. That's right. That's exactly right. So again, 20.5 is the total number. We added up to 2.5 million of new scholarships. We're distributing $18 million.
So I would assume that a chunk, if not most, of this money will end up in football or basketball. How do you decide how much goes to each sport?
Yeah, I think that's a fascinating analysis that we all went through, is how does Title IX apply, right? Title IX says that your scholarship has to be scholarship distributions have to be proportionate to your student body. Your roster sizes have to be proportionate to your student body. Ohio State's about 50-50, 50% female, 50% male on the student body side. Our athlete population matches that. So what we did is we basically have a market-based bucket of the $18 million. And to your point, football and men's basketball, they drive the market share of that of those dollars. And then we also had a proportionality bucket where we are giving money to women's basketball and women's volleyball teams. And so those coaches have dollars to distribute. So we looked at it kind of in two ways, a market-based analysis, TV viewership, social media following, impact on the economy here in Columbus, and then a sort of a Title IX bucket. That's a proportionate bucket. So
just those four sports.
Yeah,
though.
Just those four sports are receiving the bulk of the $18 million, correct.
Well, I find it interesting, though, this whole deal, we keep calling it House versus NCAA, but the case was brought by an Arizona State swimmer named Grant House. Mm-hmm. That's who House is. Mm-hmm. And then Sedona Prince, a women's basketball player from Oregon, was involved too. But House, he got his name on it. But then you just said four sports. I didn't hear a swimming.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. You know, I don't know all the history of the case itself in terms of how he brought it forward and what the premise was at the beginning, but I think it is fascinating that his name is attached to it. I've seen some comments by him about just sort of his lack of understanding, involvement, you know, counsel talking to him. So I think his name just got attached at the beginning, and then it sort of went down a different
path. He had a good last name.
It went down a different pathway, okay. And it was the five Power Five conferences, mm-hmm. also defendants, including the Pac-12, which is really not the same level, you know, that it used to be. And so the five defendants on top of the NCAA were the Big Ten, SEC, ACC, Big 12, and the Pac-12. And so we're the ones that are sort of implementing, you know, all of the House case logistics.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about Ohio State sports with Ross Bjork, athletic director at Ohio State. Recently, President Trump announced an executive order that aims to preserve non-revenue sports and offer more scholarships to these sports. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, one of the extra layers to all of this, you know, at the same time we're dealing with the House case, we're dealing with implementation, we still have state-by-state laws that are on the books that may conflict with the House case outcome. The only place that can solve that is the federal government. Like it or not, we need federal legislation. And so the I think the key point about President Trump's executive order is at least it provides a runway to get to federal legislation, that at least we know that the White House is supportive of college athletics being preserved, college athletics being able to help student athletes in this new era, revenue sharing. So it sort of outlined some things around the House case. It outlined sort of next steps. It outlined an analysis on the Department of Labor to do an analysis on whether athletes should be employees or not, right? Do that analysis. So I think it provided a sort of a pathway, but we also know that the executive order is not law. And in order to really, really codify college athletics and have uniform standards in all 50 states, we need a federal law to be implemented. So there is movement in the House side called the SCORE Act. If you couple House case, if you couple executive order, and you couple the SCORE Act that is passed the House committee, a different House now, mm-hmm. We think that provides a runway, hopefully, to get a federal law that just codifies, you know, college athletics in this new era.
Do you feel like you are now running a professional football program that happens to be housed at a college rather than running a college athletic program?
You know, I think the business elements of what we're dealing with are all new. They all, you know, resemble, right, professional leagues, if you will, right? Commercial activity, revenue, driving revenue, you know, entertainment. We just talked about game day. but we still have students, right? There's still the educational piece of it. So I think, again, I think back to compartmentalizing. How do we compartmentalize the business components of what we do, but also understand that we sit on a college campus? That can be hard, but I think we have to have honest, you know, just direct conversations about what we're all dealing with. So no, I don't feel that way, but I do feel like we have this obligation and we have this need to drive revenue, drive attention, drive NIL opportunities for our athletes. That part feels like the professional side. I just saw yesterday the University of South Florida, they have an athletic director opening. Their athletic director went to the Navy Academy to take their AD job, and they changed the title, CEO of Athletics.
Mm.
They're the first ones that I've seen do that. So instead of, you know, my title is a senior vice president and director of athletics, they're making it a CEO of Athletics. I've seen new ADs that have been hired, and number one priority, drive revenue. Again, that's okay that we have this business element, but again, we sit on a college campus. There's still our academic requirements. There's eligibility standards. There's progress towards degree components. There's all these things that we still have to adhere to on the academic side that are just not going to go away. And so I think we have to just keep everything in perspective.
You want a new title? Do you want to be CEO? Do you want to change
your
title? No,
I don't think so.
No, you're okay.
I'm good with where I am.
Before we take a break, I wanted to ask, related to all of this, have you had to hire more people? This all seems very complicated. There's a lot to do with distributing this money and just spending some time reading all the legalese. Yeah. Did you hire more people?
We hired a few. We actually hired about 7 people on the revenue generation side. We're hiring a data analytic person to really quarterback and be the point guard of all the data that we sit on. We have all kinds of data, but how do we deploy it? How do we strategize around it? That's kind of separate from the revenue share, the NIL world. We are hiring a new person in the NIL space on the athletic department side. But then our multimedia rights partner, Learfield, Ohio State Sports Properties, they're going out and they're hiring 4 new people that will run what's called Buckeye Sports Group. That will be an agency that will go out and source agreements between athletes and companies. So we're staffing up maybe.
Buckeye Sports Group is what people might know as it used to be Boosters.
Used to be like the collectives, yeah. Right? The collective world. That was sort of the nomenclature of the last 4 or 5 years.
Okay. Am I dating myself with the word Boosters? Okay.
I guess so. A little bit.
So
we're adding staff. You know, we're deploying more resources, you know, again, on the revenue generation side. We're making sure we have the right compliance structure. But we also created what we're calling sports intelligence and strategy. It's a whole new unit that basically all of our coaches and all of our support structure to support our teams will now report into. And essentially like a general manager, so that's a buzzword now, a general manager in college athletics, we'll have a centralized resource that if the baseball coach wants to talk about his scholarship allocation in a unique way, now that he has more scholarships, we can help him centrally. If we need data on how do we schedule games more to set ourselves up for postseason success, we can run some analysis and help with data to help coaches. So we've redeployed some things without adding a bunch of new staff, and so we think that's the right approach, as we said here.
That sounds like some moneyball behind the scenes
exactly.
stuff.
That's right.
All right, we're going to continue our conversation with Ohio State Athletic Director Ross Bjork. We're going to talk a little bit more about name, image, and likeness. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Upgrades are coming to both the Schottenstein Center and the SHU. This includes a new basketball court, and for football, field-level seats, giving fans a new experience watching Ohio State sports. But with so much talk about revenue sharing and name, image, and likeness focusing on football and basketball, how do universities like Ohio State find balance for student athletes in all sports? Still with us is Ross Bjork, Athletic Director for The Ohio State University. Thanks for being here this
hour.
Thank
you very much.
I wanted to jump back a little bit because we mentioned it a few times, this name, image, and likeness outside of the colleges and universities through what is now called NIL Go. So name, image, and likeness Go. It's where athletes will have to self-report deals worth $600 or more for review. So why do we need this system?
Yeah, you know, back to the House case, right? The House case was meant to sort of codify a lot of the structure that we've been dealing with the last, you know, 4 or 5 years so that we could pay the institutional dollars, but it also set the pathway that athletes could continue to market themselves to the outside world, if you will. They'd have the revenue share dollars, but those athletes that maybe don't receive revenue share or have a unique upside could still go out and work with companies. They could work with local companies, national companies. They could get a pizza parlor, or they could get a bank, or they could get an apparel deal, whatever it might be. But now with the House case settlement, we have the ability to help them. But also, we also wanted it to be real NIL, because a lot of what's happened the last couple of years is we just had donors basically paying whatever the amount was without any return by the athlete. So the House case settlement, what it did is it codified that, look, athletes have to, if they can do a third-party deal, it has to meet three prongs. A valid business purpose, so it'd be a real marketing deal. It had to meet a range of compensation for a similar situated individual, an athlete at a pro level or another college student. And then it basically had to be goods and services available for sale. It couldn't just be, hey, show up at this office building, walk the hallways, shake some hands, and here's a check for $100,000. That's not a valid business purpose, right? That's just pay for play. And so everybody...
If you show up at a Cane's or a Donato's or a pizza place or a chicken place,
yep,
and you sit there for an hour signing footballs? Is that... Yep.
That's right. That would meet a... Because you're promoting that company,
okay,
who's selling a product.
Okay.
Right.
But not walking random hallways in a random... Okay.
Right.
Got it.
Right. So those three prongs were set up in the House case settlement. So NIL Go is a clearinghouse. You submit a contract. It has, let's say it's a $100,000 deal. It has 8 deliverables, let's say, or 10 deliverables that the athlete has to do. They'll run it through an algorithm. They'll run it through a lot of analysis to say, you know what, that meets a range of compensation. Or if it's higher than a normal range of compensation, the athlete can readjust the deal. They can go through arbitration. Again, all of this is baked out through the House case settlement. So the NIL Go system is meant to basically just tell us what the market is. If the market is on the high end, great. The athletes deserve that. If the market is more of a true market, that's what we all want. That's what we were all asking for. So the NIL Go system is that clearinghouse that basically is monitoring the market value of third-party NIL opportunities for student athletes. The NCAA proposed this actually back in 2021, and it got shelved because they were worried about the legal threats of having an environment where there was a fair market value test. The NFL, they have a fair market value test for their sponsorship agreements between athletes and companies because they don't want people to circumvent their salary cap, right? And so there's already a system for fair market value analysis in the sponsor-athlete world. And so this is kind of mimicking, you know, what's already in place in other pro leagues.
You mentioned earlier that every time you come up with a new rule, you get sued. So wouldn't you assume that as soon as a contract doesn't make it through NIL Go, you're going to get sued?
Yeah, well, so again, part of the settlement, right, that again codifies all student athletes at this point in time is there is an arbitration process. So if an athlete disagrees with the outcome from NIL Go, they can automatically go to an arbitrator. And the arbitrator can work out, hey, this, we think this is a fair deal, the athlete. And then once the arbitration, then that's binding. It's a binding arbitration process through the legal system. You know, there is a lot of chatter about the durability of the House case settlement. It does have a 10-year window. The fact that a federal judge signed it, stamped it, it's pretty hard to overcome because now you have a precedent. So can somebody sue against the House case settlement? And it would take a long time. And that's why we all need patience. We all need all of this to work. We need the enforcement. We need the rules published. We need a little more clarity. But to pierce a federal lawsuit, a federal judge, it's pretty difficult. Again, I'm not an attorney. It's pretty hard to do. And the fact that you have arbitration where the athlete has a voice, where that never happened before. It was a black hole within the NCAA, and you never really got any visibility. Now, at least there's a process that the athlete can go through.
So you said fair market value, and they can deny it if they feel like it's over fair market value. But isn't fair market value just what someone's willing to pay?
Yes, it is. And again, that's where the system, as it gets built out, I think will just have, again, what is a true value? What is Jeremiah Smith really worth? Okay, well, submit a deal. He just signed an agreement with Adidas, which is, you know, we're a Nike school, but he's free to do that. He can do an Adidas deal. That deal gets sent through the system, and that'll establish a market rate. So you're exactly right. The market is what somebody's willing to pay. But in this environment, there should be deliverables because that's what a true marketing deal is all about. And that's, again, that's what everybody said they wanted with the outcome of this settlement.
So does he wear Adidas shoes on his personal time or when he's on Ohio State field?
On his personal time.
Okay, right. When he's on Ohio State field, he has to wear Nikes.
That's exactly right.
Interesting. Yep. Okay. So
again, lots of nuances to all of this.
Do you know how many NIL Go submissions Buckeyes have done?
I think it's just shy of about 100 so far in the first month. And so we've had great success. Some of them we're still waiting on the outcome. They can ask questions and do some follow-up, but a lot of deals have been approved already.
I looked at the website, and you have to have like a school email address to log in, so I didn't get very far.
Yeah,
but so
yeah.
You yeah. So
each athlete, we're basically going to each of our teams, each of our athletes, and we're just having them register their accounts. With NIL Go, it'll just make it a lot faster as deals, you know, start to get submitted.
Okay. So do you have an expectation? You have no idea how many will go through there.
We really don't. Mm-hmm. Again, Buckeye Sports Group, you know, we're up and running. We're outsourcing agreements. We're matchmaking companies with athletes. And so, you know, how those numbers shake out and what that looks like, you know, it's all being built, you know, as we go here.
And there's a group helping to oversee all of this. It's called the College Sports Commission. You helped create that too.
I was part of an implementation committee. The Big Ten asked me and the athletic director at Washington, Pat Chun, to serve on this committee to represent, you know, sort of the Big Ten, you know, ideals in this, but also the ACC, the SEC, the Big 12, the Pac-12 had insight as well. And we all just kind of helped create the runway to say, we want enforcement. We want rules. Here's how we can help Deloitte build the clearinghouse. We have a cap management system to manage the 20.5, you know, and the $18 million within that. So it's a great setup. It's a great system, but it needs more visibility so the public understands it more. They need to hire more staff. So Brian Seeley is the CEO of this new entity. He's got a lot of work to do, but he's the right. He came from Major League Baseball, really creative mindset. It was a prosecutor, and it's really a regulatory body. It's not a traditional conference. It's not the NCAA. Their sole focus is the House case rules and the House case implementation matters.
Will anything through NIL Go be public? Will people be able to know what kind of deals people are getting?
I don't believe so. Same kind of principle. Because they're students, there's a lot of sort of privacy rights that are, you know, protected by that process.
Well, we are down to only 90 seconds left, and I had wanted to talk about some changes coming to Ohio State. So I guess we have time for one really quickly. The SHU is going to have premium seating coming in 2026. So what will that be like?
Yeah, I think it's a great opportunity just to implement something that was kind of an easy lift. It's really not a construction project. It's more of an install. It was an opportunity. The south end zone, the seats around the field just kind of lacked a little bit of an identity. So we have a demand for more premium seating. But that what that does, that spits off money that allows us to upgrade restrooms and concessions. It allows us to spend money on the stadium. The other thing is we're, moving the band to the north end. Again, give them a better sound, you know, amplification. So it just became an opportunity. But it's not the only thing that we're going to work on. We're working on technology. We're working on concourse improvements. We have to balance how do we monetize the building, but also make sure that every fan has something that's an upgrade and a better experience. So that's what we're going to be focused on as we map out new projects.
Did you have to move some season ticket holders to move the band? Did they have to change their seats?
We did not. Oh, we did, okay. Yeah, because it was the Block O. Mm-hmm. The Block O student group had some seats in the north end zone. We moved them to the south, so they're all combined now. So
okay.
We didn't have to move.
Shuffling of people. Yep. All right. Well, we've been talking with Ross Bjork, athletic director for The Ohio State University. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And you've been listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich.